Hi, everybody. My name is Tom Scott, chairman of the Nantucket Project. I'm with RP Eddy again today. Thanks for being here. RP, two topics I want to go through today. One is perhaps hopeful news on numbers, which actually I think are exactly in line with some of the things we talked about a week ago or more. And then secondly, I just want to have a brief conversation about the frontline people vis-a-vis the economy, let's say, and feeding us, and that being the retail workers. But we'll get back to that. Let's just start with a couple of numbers. In New York in particular, saw the daily count of deaths falling for the first time, 594 deaths on Saturday compared to 630 on Friday. Even new hospitalizations were down Saturday from Friday. And ICU admissions have gone down. What does this mean to you? React to that and sort of tell me what we're seeing and why we're seeing it.
So because we don't have really good testing and we don't actually know everyone who's infected or was infected, the way we have to measure the growth of the virus right now is exactly those things: hospitalizations, ICU admissions, deaths. And deaths are becoming obviously a pretty powerful measure on how our battle against the disease is going. And as you said, we've had positive trends in the last couple of days on all those things in New York, which is obviously good news, right? That literally means people aren't dying who otherwise would die. And that's awesome. And it's no surprise. We talked about this a week ago and said, if we follow social distancing, we will see positive results. And so that's what we're seeing. So again, it's empowering that this works, and we should know that, but it's good to see. It's a testament to our healthcare workers in our hospitals. There have not been overwhelmed ICUs. They have not run out of ventilators yet because they've been crafty and figured it out. So people are surviving that otherwise wouldn't, and it's working. So that's a great, great thing. The warning, we had positive results almost exactly a week ago as well. We had one day, maybe two, when some of these numbers were positive, not all of them. That was a blip. It disappeared to be. This feels a little more solid to me. So that's good. New York's on the right path because New York is really locked down. Go look at videos of New York City. It's on the right path. The rest of the country, not the entire country, is. So that's our challenge.
And that's sort of the, I mean, because the other one I would point out, you know, Europe has seen some good numbers. You know, Italy, there were 525 deaths since Saturday evening. That's the lowest such figure since 427 died on March 19th. So that's a real nice sort of endorsement of practices that work. And so that's what you're saying, is that when you do the practices, you get these kind of results, but that in the rest of the country, that kind of thing isn't happening the way it should.
New York is a great laboratory for this, right? It's obviously a lot of people, 20 million people in the New York metro area, I think 8 million in Manhattan on a busy day, which obviously there isn't right now. And you can actually kind of confine the area. It's got a high ratio of police per people. It's got a high media consumption per person ratio. So these are people who are a little more aware than other places of the world, meaning they are getting the media, they're getting the warning. They can look out the window and actually see it looks different. So it should work in New York, and it appears that it has. So that's awesome. Particularly, yes, it's great.
RP, you and I walked through some numbers. You were showing me the graphs that sort of compare the nations, allows us to look at the U.S. as compared to other places, and it was pretty telling. Can you walk us through some of those numbers and just so we get a sense of what's going on and what you're seeing?
Yeah, sure, Tom. So this graph is a little different than other graphs you've probably seen. I won't get into like the technical aspects of it, but it's showing the ratio of new confirmed cases to total cases, which is a good way of measuring growth. And if you take a look at what's happened to them over time, you can see this flattening of the curve. So let's start from the beginning. So if you start here, you've got China growing, and you see there's this initial bump where they kind of get religion and try to deal with it. And then it keeps growing, because that wasn't enough of a fix. And then you get, if you're looking at China on the right-hand side here, what we call the full Wuhan, right? They shut down Wuhan and their rate drops dramatically, okay? At the same time, going back in time a little bit here, you have Hong Kong picking it up. They drop right away, if you can see that in the left, because they—
And because they were disciplined right away?
Right away. So they followed the whole series of things you have to do. They did enforced quarantine, masks, in testing. Boom, they drop off, and they do have a bump later. We talked about Japan gets a little late at the game. They drop off. South Korea gets a pretty big start into the virus, and then they drop off precipitously. You'll see right here. So they start to really drop off. So what we're noticing now in this part of the graph are South Korea, China, Japan, and Hong Kong. Remember, Hong Kong had a double bump we talked about before. They locked down, and then they kind of eased up, then they locked down. Now they're kind of growing again, but they're going to lock down again. This is a perfect lesson for us. If you don't stick with the lockdown, the disease comes back. If you do, like in South Korea, the disease goes away. If you do, like in China, the disease goes away. Now, you're going to see someone come rocketing out of the horse race here in a second. And unfortunately, it's us. So look at the United States. Our curve is not flattening at all. Spain is beginning to, you were just saying, Italy's beginning to have some success. Spain's having some success. Germany's a little flatter. But the distance between the US curve and all these other curves, that's simply a matter of enforced quarantine, wearing masks, washing your hands, all the stuff we've been told to do. We're not doing it so far as the data shows yet. And so off we go, streaking away. Now that's at a logarithmic scale. Now let me show you what this looks like on a linear scale, so you can actually get a view of the difference. This is the kind of graph we all grew up looking at, right? Where things on the vertical axis double every tick, 50,000, 100,000, excuse me, not double, where they go up in a standard basis on the left side. Logarithmic scale, which allows you to see the drops a little bit more, is where every tick goes up by a factor of 10. But if you look at this scale, the way that all of us kind of learned how to look at graphs till you started taking, you know, college level math or high level high school math, that's really what's going on right now in the world. And you can see again, China flattened the curve, Italy is flattening, Spain is flattening, and other countries that are way back here, South Korea, Hong Kong, and others, never even got into the launch pad, right? They stopped it really early. That's the United States streaking on ahead. You could find a little bit of optimism in the fact the shape is moving a little to the right, a little less steep, but so we still have a lot of work to do.
Let me speculate for a moment and just tell me where my logic may be wrong. Is part of what we're seeing, so there are the political issues, the issues of freedom, the states' rights issues in the United States, that's part of it. Is some of what we're seeing the results of effective disinformation, where, you know, certain parts of our culture look at the world one way and certain parts of our culture look at the world a different way? And part of what's happening is that we're seeing the continued growth because we can't be on a unified message. Am I extrapolating too much?
I think it's really close to that. I don't think it's I don't think we're seeing our curve keep going up and others going down because of Russian or Chinese disinformation or even snake oil salesman disinformation. I think it's close. I think it's partly because of the hyper-partisanship in this country and the bifurcation of our views. So if you go back and look at the reporting on Fox News in the first 3 weeks of this virus, it was denial. It's not an issue. It was very similar to what the White House was saying. And if you don't take a virus seriously, particularly it turns out this one in the beginning, then too much of it spreads virally and it gets ahead of you. And so that's what's happened. So it's not foreign state disinformation. It's our own hyperpartisanship and not trusting different points of view. And then having a White House that in the beginning wasn't presenting or taking this seriously enough. That would be my view of one of the reasons we got so far behind the eight ball.
Okay, and so can you identify a couple of the places where the trouble is headed next?
Yeah, so we've been talking about how the disease is being, the news that we're talking about today is that the disease is, we're having some success containing the disease in the New York area. We already have some in San Francisco, so the coast in Seattle. By the way, big news, Oregon is shipping ventilators to New York. I think that's a really positive story in both ways. Oregon has contained their risk. New York is getting the ventilators because they need it. It's about sharing. They don't need to do that. I think it's awesome and it shows a success. When you are protected and you're helping yourself and you're secure, you can help other people. Oregon showing that. So the coasts are getting more contained. The middle states that are later into lockdown, and some of them are still not locked down, are beginning to see upticks of cases and in hospital admissions, ICUs, and deaths. And that is going to be the trend. Now, what has to happen on the coasts or the country, the cities that have sort of contained it, is we don't want to be South Korea and have that double bump, or Hong Kong, excuse me, and have that double bump, right? So now this is the hard part. How do you lock down New York and Connecticut now after we're having success and keep travelers from other states from coming in and re-spreading it. So that's going to be a one challenge. And the other, what that means is, it gets back to us. All of us are going to have to show our own social distancing and our own interventions. Just presuming that whoever you see at the grocery store or wherever just got on a bus from New Orleans where there's a huge outbreak.
Two pieces of headlines. One, you got Boris Johnson. He's been admitted to the hospital. And then the other one I wanted to talk briefly about is Captain Brett Crozier, who has tested positive for the disease as well.
Brett, yeah. I'm not surprised at all that Captain Crozier has it, because A, on these ships, you're going to get it. And B, he is a great leader, and great leaders are at the front lines and are hanging out with their sailors and airmen. And clearly Captain Crozier was doing that. And I hope he'll be healthy. Bojo, Boris Johnson, it appears, is not as healthy and had to be hospitalized. And I hope that people don't revel in schadenfreude, because Boris Johnson was a bit of a denier about this in the beginning and call this karma, because it's not. He was trying to make these very hard decisions about the economy versus health. And but these are the kind of social signposts that are going to help us make what I fervently believe are the right decisions, right? So as these, let's just say he was a denier in the beginning, or at least he had a non-scientific view of how to handle this. He had a view called herd immunity. It's something he was going to posit for the UK until he was dissuaded from that. The fact that he has a disease and is more ill, hopefully there's something positive from that, which is people say, look, this is a very famous person. He's a leader of, you know, our closest ally. Let's take this very seriously. And that's what has to happen. Leaders have to start taking this more and more seriously. And we're getting there. We're a month late. The United States is 1 month late to the game.
I actually slept this weekend. And I felt like I slept this week, because I haven't slept in 3 weeks. And I think I slept because I had clarity on my own business, clarity on the world, clarity on lots of things that I felt very anxious about. And it's not that there's not a lot of bad news surrounding, it's just clarity allowed me to rest. And I feel like a different person today. My question is, do you feel some degree of normalcy, some degree, it's not good news, but there seems to be a relative understanding of the challenges to the economy first. And then second, I just want to take some time to talk about the clearly emerging factor of these people who are on the front lines of basically supplying us with food and supplies, and the heroism of it all. The heroism of somebody who works at Walmart, who works at Kroger, who works at Stop and Shop. It's a big deal.
Sorry to be on a downer note, but like, it's a slightly dystopian reality. When I was at the grocery store earlier this week, and it was, you know, it's a Greenwich grocery store. It's a pretty civilized place to be. And I'm looking at these poor people bagging my groceries, and they're doing all they can to protect them, but some don't have masks on. And as you know, as I think you know, a number of retail workers are getting sick, right? They're not there. They are heroes, absolutely. And if they weren't there, things would shut down really fast. Like, social unrest would increase. But they have to be there, right? They don't have a choice. They have got to go pay for grandma's meds and their rent and food. So they have to be out there being exposed to the virus while others are going to get their food. And that's brutal, right? And that's a real pointed brutality of what's happening right now. So whatever we can do to protect them is critical. And similarly with our doctors. And we also have to be aware that this is a coming flashpoint between labor and shop owners, labor and capitalism, where at some point, you know, I'll tell you, if I was forced to be doing that, I'd be looking really carefully at the unemployment benefits right now. But you can't get those unless you're fired. So this is a tough spot for a lot of people, and it's brutal.
Yeah. That phenomenon that you're describing is so real and so alive, and I'm reading more and more about it, and I'm hearing more and more about it. I guess I would just say on the hopeful side that I'm also seeing a lot of people do a lot of things about it, which is to say, helping create programs and create solutions, one. And then two, even on the basic level, I do think that people are recognizing this heroism thing, that these people are serving us in a way that is above and beyond. It's a big deal. So
I think one thing, Tom, that the Nantucket Project and that you do a really good job doing is humanizing businesses, right? So all these businesses, from the largest to the smallest, are run by human beings who have families and care about people, right? These aren't sociopathic organizations. And those humans, the top of these organizations, understand the need to take care of their employees. Sloan Valve, we talk about all the time. They're working really, really hard to ensure that America gets the critical cleaning supplies that Sloan Valve needs and makes, but that the workers are safe. And this is a hard, expensive thing to do. And they're doing that. And I know other big organizations are doing the same thing. And to be honest with you, if an organization doesn't do this, the Darwinian process is they're going to be washed out, right? Yeah. If you're not taking care of your workers and doing everything you can to keep them safe, you're going to go out of business because of the force of labor action against you. So, but the good news is most leaders are concerned about that from a self-interest and a humanitarian point of view.
If you could just give us a sense, what kind of information can we expect this week?
There's light at the end of the tunnel, and it's probably not a train. We're going to figure out this week what the potential futures are, what they are for the disease, what they are for our economy, what they are for us as a nation, what they are for fatalities here. We're going to spend a lot of time thinking about what our leaders are going to do and what kind of what's going to motivate them. We're also going to think a lot about what we're going to need to do based on what our leaders do or don't do. So I'm looking forward to getting more clarity about those futures, providing more clarity about those futures. And then as we understand what they are, we'll track which ones are proceeding in likelihood and which ones are receding. And this is a process that we've done for a number of years at Ergo that's very powerful about understanding the potential scenarios ahead of us and which ones are coming.
That's great. RP, thank you. We look forward to this week, and we'll see you soon.
Good to see you guys. Take care.